Hello, everyone. Good to see you.
This is the Newcastle County Council Technology Subcommittee meeting of April 7th, 2015. I'm Chairman Bob Weiner, and we're having a subcommittee meeting, which we are a part of the executive committee meeting. A continuation of the meeting from last Tuesday, March 31st. And with me around the table is Council to Council Carol Doolin. Thank you very much for joining us. We'll be joined shortly by Council President Bullock. He's just about to enter the room. And let's everyone just go around and introduce themselves so I don't make a fool of myself.
Janet Kilpatrick, Council Person for the 3rd District.
Tim Sheldon from the 9th District.
Tony Gardner, Chief Administrative Services.
Daniel Sherquist, Executive Office.
Mike Kozakowski, Recorder of Deeds.
Donald Kowski, Boulder Designs.
Valerie George, Legislative Aide to Councilman Tackett, 11th District.
Scott Collins, Legislative Aide to Councilman Cartier, 8th District.
Councilman John Cartier, Council District 8, Eastern Brandywine 100.
Betsy Gardner, Clerk of Council.
Lisa Diller, 5th District.
We do have a quorum, but my aide Lou Hinkle has to make copies of the meeting minutes.
No.
They've
already sent
in. They've already been sent in. Are we in a position to approve the meeting minutes from the prior two meetings?
Once a motion has been made.
There's six.
Yeah, we just have six.
1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. My apologies, may I call them. We'll defer approving the minutes, but we will distribute them. So, at our last meeting, we discussed the questions which this committee was charged with. We've now been joined by Councilman Hollins. I'll entertain a motion to approve the meeting minutes from the last two meetings.
So moved.
Second.
It's been moved and seconded that the meeting minutes from the last two meetings be approved and seconded. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Let the record reflect that the meeting minutes from the last two meetings have been approved. To review the memorandum, which was part of the motion, we're looking at how council's emails and documents can be accessed, who approves access, how council is advised, who has access to council's emails and documents, which council emails and documents may have been accessed in previous years. And thirdly, what would be the internal protocol to protect attorney-client or other confidential and privileged information in council's internal system? If we vote for a separate system, for example, the clerk of council may provide a confidential report on an internal personnel investigation to the president as personnel supervisor. How do we ensure that the report is not accessed by or for other council members? Same question for an attorney-client privilege memorandum to a council member on a proposed law. Will there be an independent IT person or a check and balance among staff to access the system? And what we discussed last time with the assistance of our general manager, Mr. Gardner, and with our council attorney and with all those sitting around the table, was that we could have an independent third party monitoring our email system and controlling it. That means that a third party only would have the key to getting into our email system. And Council to Council Doolin explained that there are legal reasons to get into an email system. One would be for FOIA, which is controlled by the legislative branch, and the other one would be by discovery, which again is controlled by the legislative branch, which would collaborate with the law department of the executive branch should there be a discovery request. And we also talked about the way that we could have self-audits so that a system, much as was described by our guest, Mr. Rutkowski, would automatically give us on whatever frequency we wanted, daily, weekly, monthly, semi-annually, annually, an audit to see if someone had been into our emails. And then further inquiry could be directed to Mr. Rutkowski or someone holding his position to do a further search to find out who that might be. There are general limitations already in existence as to legally prohibiting access to emails, and our council, the council had distributed to council members in their box a some federal law that was promulgated some time ago, but it could be applicable. Having said that, council is free as well, if it so chooses, to adopt as part of its procedures some sort of penalty for a council member that were to, or anyone that were to get into our email system without the authority. Now I want to turn to council and council to correct all the misstatements that I just made, if any, or to elaborate.
Point of order, sir.
Yes.
We have a court.
Yeah, we did before.
Oh.
When Penn was called.
Oh, okay.
Council Doolin, would you like to opine or elaborate or explain any of the things that I just said?
Mr. Chair, you did a very fine job. I just wanted to clarify that what I did hand out is the council's handbook on the use of electronic devices. At the last meeting, it was handed out an executive personnel policy that does not apply to council. We have our own policy that was adopted at the same time in compliance to state law, and that was what was in the results of that.
Very good. Thank you.
You're welcome.
So when we continued the last meeting, we were just at the point where Mr. John Rutkowski, who has a business, he's CAO for a business in Newark, Delaware. Although, Mr. Rutkowski, you did explain your background, there are members who were not here last time. You are our invited guest. You and I have never met or had any communications that were outside the viewer scope of other people here in the room. I wanted to make a point of that because I think just like any one of us wouldn't want to have some sort of special relationship, I want to be protective as well to make sure that this, if we were to enter into a relationship with Mr. Rutkowski or anyone, it should be openly and transparently and all of us participating. And I hope that others will participate in those discussions as we move forward. Yes, Councilwoman Kilpatrick.
This is probably a question for Carol, but
yes.
If we would go forward with anything, do we not have to do bids?
That was a question that my aide researched, and if there's a bid threshold and also a sole source rule. So, and both of them are applicable.
Yes.
So, Tony Gardner's.
Right, Tony Gardner, Chief Administrative Services. If it's over the $50,000 threshold, we would have to do it. Depends on what it actually, if it's professional services, it's over $50,000. If it's just goods and services, depends on what kind of service he's providing, it would be $25,000. So, if it's over $25,000, we have to go off a bid. If it's over $50,000 for professional services, we would have to go off a bid.
Thank you.
Is that in a given year? I mean, if you did a long term contract.
It's in a given fiscal year.
A given fiscal year.
Yes.
Okay. Thank you.
Is there a sole source rule that could be applicable as well to the situation?
If they're the only ones that could supply that service, we can look into a sole source. But that has to be brought before council.
Okay. And council to council, would this be a contract as between the legislative branch and a company such as Mr. Rutkowski, or would it involve the executive branch?
Although I would certainly defer to Mr. Boyle, who does our purchase orders, as having expertise, this, in my opinion, would be a legislative branch contract because the legislative branch would be contracting for the services.
Okay, thank you. I'm going to now, unless anyone has something to add or say, I'm going to turn the table over, give the floor to Mr. Rutkowski to introduce himself again, and then explain, after having heard council's needs and concerns for privacy and security and the legal needs to get in the system, how he, if he were given the contract, his company would approach it.
Okay, thank you. John Rutkowski, Boulder Designs. I was contacted by Lou, who was doing a Google search after contacting various vendors like Microsoft or Google, referred back down to a local partner, which I am with both of those organizations. I've been in business 29 years, come June 1st. doing IT management services through the Philadelphia metropolitan area. Local, born and somewhat raised in Delaware, went away and came back, so I'm a bit local. We take care of professional services firms, predominantly architects, engineers, lawyers. What you have here is partially a policy decision of how can we effectively audit what goes on inside of our system, you know, who is accessing information and leaving an audit trail. Currently, I have not inspected your system, so I can't, I'm guessing in certain aspects. I did give to Lou an audit consent agreement, if you want to go forward, that I can look in more depth, but I have to have written permission before I'm allowed to go look at any information. Of course, it's a non-disclosure agreement as well. So it appears that your existing system does not have an audit trail for who is accessing information, what or when, in what scope. Whereas there are various third-party archive systems. As email goes in and out of the system, it's archived, can't be deleted, can't be erased, can't be changed. And when somebody has a discovery need or a freedom of information or legislative need, you know, they have a right to go audit. They log in with their credentials, not some anonymous quote administrator. Their specific credentials, date and time, knows what IP, where on the internet they were coming from. It shows what mailboxes they searched, what subjects they searched on, what results they found, and that's a generated audit log. So it keeps that information for basically 7 years. It does roll off after that period of time. So you could see or say we just change one piece of your problem from a business point of view of who do we trust, where it's going in, that you could say the entire nccde.org domain gets audited. That's one possible solution. That's the least disruptive solution, least costly solution out there to go do something. I gave hard numbers to, again, Lou last week, and I can review them in further depth. They also asked from a technology point of view, what happens if we wanted to split off just the council? Well, we could split it off if say what's called a subdomain. You could take that group of 35 people, have their own email, their own archive, still be compliant with discovery, still be compliant with other audit trails, but it operates, you know, independently, per se. And then one third option was brought up, says we want to just cut the cord, we want to be totally separate, have our own infrastructure. And there was some discussion about, oh, that's going to be a very expensive proposition to do. And I brought some hard numbers with me today that says, no, it's very standard. We go through law firm divorces all the time, that law firms come together and they dissolve and they change. They're always in flux. And really, you're essentially just sort of a mid-sized law firm. If we look at it from a business point of view, with your, you know, how many people and what your particular needs are. So I am the captain of a peer group of about 37 other businesses of my nature. We have nationwide coverage out there. We all do business the same way. We all use the same standards. We use the same help desk. We use the same service. So while your needs are regional, and I'm a small business person locally, I'm part of a larger organization that has, you know, more power and more depth behind me, that, you know, we're looking for other verification of, is that technology appropriate? Is it, you know, I have 35 other peers who can go look at it and say, yeah, John's telling you the right, or he's full of stuff. So you've got a business decision to make. It's really a business decision. It's not a technology decision. Business decision on what your costs are, what services you're getting, or whether or not there's a compromise, not a compromise, but a change in policy that you can have an auditable system so you know who's accessing information. You know, they may be accessing for a variety of reasons. We just don't want them to be accessing it for reasons beyond freedom of information, due diligence, discovery. You know, we just don't want to be snooping around in people's dirty laundry, sort of, that may be out there. As an IT provider, you know, I'm sort of like your priest or your rabbi. You know, I'm the confessor. You know, we see stuff, we don't reveal stuff. You know, unless there's a crime in progress that, you know, we know that there's imminent danger to somebody or somebody is violating a law, then we're sort of obligated. While we don't have a professional, there's not a bar association for IT people, and there's not another registered, we treat ourselves with that sort of level of integrity, because if we divulge information, we let something, we breach security, we're never going to get another job again. You know, it's just the way it is out there. You have to have trust with people. So no matter who you deal with, you're going to have to trust somebody with the security of your system, be it an inside person or an outside person. Somebody's always got the keys to the kingdom. So, you know, you always have to have that trust out there somewhere, be it inside or outside the organization.
Could you discuss a complete break where we, council members and staff, would each have our own laptops? How would that affect both the technological break as well as the cost factor?
The way our business is structured, we handle computers and users as a flat fee per month. We handle the servers, whatever machines that your databases are on. We handle the sites as an item as well. So we have a flat fee that says how many servers, how many workstations, how many sites, and it covers everything. It includes the migration. There's no sort of upfront cost. There is no project cost. You're kept up to date. You still buy your hardware. You still buy your software licenses. Of course, you can get special government pricing on many of the licenses out there. We pulled some of those up. So you can get some price breaks that are flat no matter who you buy them from. So that's our particular model of doing business, that we don't charge per hour. We charge a flat rate, an unlimited amount of labor for a fixed amount, because our business interests are then aligned. We can't make money unless we do things in the most efficient way possible, versus coming back to you every time, oh, I spent 2 hours here and I got to charge you this, I got to charge you that. No, we just say, we're a mature business, we've been doing this for so long, we know what it takes, no matter how screwed up a network is, we know how much time it takes to go put it right and keep it running right.
So what would happen if the system went down during the workday or let's say on a weekend?
Well, you would have, one is we are always monitoring systems 24/7. You know, we will get alerts and it's our goal to always call you up and say, hey, there was a problem on your system, we fixed it. And you go, I didn't know there was a problem on the system. So, for example, in the most basic level, I have two internet circuits coming in such that your load balance, you know, in here, that if one goes down, you come over to another one. We have backup and disaster recovery servers. That is actually a fourth item. You know, IT management services, voice over IP, and backup and disaster recovery are sort of the three main things you can, you know, purchase as a service from us. So backup and disaster recovery, a server, smoke comes out of it, it's burned up. If we have a backup and disaster recovery server running, at most we will lose maybe 45 minutes of work, and usually in 15 minutes it spins up the virtual image of the server and you're back in business. So something disastrous goes out, we can spin up a virtual machine in about 15 minutes from when we say disaster, we can't fix what you got, let's get it working again. Now, also, if you said we're not going to have servers anymore, we're going to go out in the cloud, we're going to have everything out in the cloud, and the cloud service, we are using U.S. Signal in Michigan and Wisconsin has 10 data centers. So your information is written to multiple locations at the same time. It's up in Michigan because there's no hurricanes, there's no tornadoes, there's no earthquakes up there. And it's colder because we got to go chill all of these machines that are running. What does mean is you need a reliable internet connection and more than one. Unfortunately, unfortunately, Wilmington doesn't have Fios. Boy, if we had Fios in Wilmington, we have a much more reliable connection than Comcast or any of the other services that are out there. But we don't have that. But we do have alternative services that are in the neighborhood of $200 a month, you know, to get for about a 35-person firm, as is we're handling the council's needs. So if it's out there in the internet, you know, as long as you're in it working, the servers die in the server farm, it rolls over to the next server farm. You may see an interruption of a couple of seconds, a pause, and then you're back working again. Email, we would actually run your email through Microsoft Office 365's email system. The alternative is Google, rather than having your own server in-house, because we can then audit all the mail that goes in and out of the system. It can't be bypassed in any way if you have the server up in the cloud. And so our audit system works and also gives you continuity. Even if Microsoft goes down, you can still send and receive email through the archive system. So there are fairly straightforward solutions out there. I have to go look at how you actually work in order to make sure I'm giving you the right diagnosis, because I can't prescribe something without a diagnosis. Like a doctor giving the drug prescription without diagnosis, that's malpractice. So at some point we have to say, show me all the work you do during the day. Let's make sure we can accommodate all the work. How do we connect back to the other county or state government services such that you can access those in a secure manner? So at some point, if you're going to go with this separate provision, somebody needs to be given a, you know, permission to go inspect and a non-disclosure agreement to go look at what you do to make sure everything falls within the scope. It should. Like I said, you're not really doing anything more than your average mid-sized, you know, law firm.
So the two ways you describe would be, we'd be a subset of the current email system by taking the newcastlecounty.org and putting a council/nccde.org
yes.
in front of it. And then the other way,
and that costs you basically about $852 a month to go do that.
And as opposed to what other alternative?
If you went totally separate and you were going off into the cloud, I ran through just some numbers, and again, I'm guessing based on the numbers you gave me, and I gave a copy of this, that you were doing 35 users, we're still managing one cloud server, we have one site here with firewalls and web filter in place. You're replacing, putting in your own phone system with unlimited local and hardware, 35 there, you're doing office email, you're doing mail encryption for, say, six users, because you don't need to encrypt everybody's email, but anybody who's doing HIPAA, PIN information, anything that falls in one of, like, the Sarbanes-Oxley rules or any of those, that's kind of information should be encrypted. So I just said six users out of 35, which is usually not everybody. And you were running out in the cloud for everybody. You know, you're running about $5,000 a month to go do that kind of service. That's all in IT support, help desk, everything. Just to give you an idea of scope.
And may I ask Carol Doolin or Betsy Gardner to compare that quickly with the cross charges of $140,000 a month? Just doing the math quickly in my head, I would say that's less than
$60,000 at 5 months.
60 versus 125.
Daniel Shearquest, EA in technology.
One topic that was not brought up was the data. You guys use about close to a petabyte of data. So if we retain it here, that's one option. The other option is to migrate it to your new system. If it's kept here, cross charges will still be in effect to some degree.
Thank you.
And just out of curiosity, what's in that petabyte of data?
Various different files. There's group drives, there's personal P drives, various different save files, and I don't know what the content is.
Okay. That's a large amount of data for about 35 users. We manage a 65-person architectural firm with all their data that goes back almost 20 years, and they're only like 70 terabytes. So So, big magnitude of change.
And one other question.
But that's a discovery issue that, like I said, you can't prescribe something until you investigate what are the details that are out there.
If we were to go with our own separate system, I assume Linksys or some comparable would work. I know with my law office, we have 35 people in our shop, but we have 15 offices in the country with 800 lawyers and staff. So we, all of us, can access through a Linksys system the computer systems of my law firm, Fox Rothschild. Mm-hmm. Would it work the same way with county council, let's say, if we were to go to a separate system?
If you're in a separate system in the cloud, we can grant that access or restrict that access. We can say you can only access the county's data when you're sitting inside the county's office building, you know, here. You know, because we can restrict it by IP address. We can also put in two-factor authentication, which means that nobody can guess your password. They also have to steal your cell phone or the token that, you know, you log in, and then it sends you a text message of a random series of numbers that you then have to add in again. So you can't have people just knowing or guessing your password because they lack that extra piece of authentication. So we can tighten it down or loosen it up depending on what your needs are. So certain firms say you can't have email, you know, installed. You can access your email, say, through a web interface on your cell phone, but you can't install it, so there aren't any copies. So if somebody says steals your cell phone, they're not going to steal the email that's on there. And enforce policies like, no matter what, it's always locked. So if I lay it down, you know, it's not accessible to somebody else. They've got to unlock the phone.
And just going back to what I know, and I'll turn to questions, with our Linksys system with Fox Rothschild, we can't access the entire database. Let's say I'm home at midnight and I decide I want to go take a look and review a contract. I'm limited to what I have on my front burner. I can't go into the whole storage files and the back burners because of security purposes. That's just what our law firm does. Can we put in those sorts of protocols as well?
There are usually in there sort of the depth of access. The depth of access is usually controlled by who you are and your password. But then you can put in some criteria that, oh, you're not in the county building because we know what internet address you are. Therefore, it stops at some level of depth that you can do email, you can say update agendas, you can, but you may not be able to go to farther. Other systems that may tie into other county or state government functions, you can't access them unless you're physically sitting in this building. So yes, there are levels of access that can be put in place.
And before you could give us a more specific numbers and how to replicate the 13 or 19 services that our IS department provides us, you would need to do some more due diligence?
That is correct, yes.
Would you be?
But it's pretty linear in here. The only upcharge or anything that's changed is the amount of storage and whether or not you need all that storage. You know, if that storage is 20 years old and you only need to keep 7 years of it, well, why are you keeping 20 years? Unless it's just pure historical need versus legal need.
Last question, then I'm going to turn it to others. I'm referencing the document handed out by our general manager, Mr. Tony Gardner, who said IS services related to county council, if they were to go off county IS, and there are 13 items, some of which are cross-charge, like software usage, and separate charges for iPads, phones associated as well under a different charge level, and they extend from PC hardware assigned to council staff and members, local software, printers, help desk, server desk storage, separate email system, VPN connectivity, wireless access and support, data recovery for files and storage,
network infrastructure, ISP, iPads, wireless devices, and separate phone systems. Did you look at this list?
Basically, I went through that list, and we've outlined or covered at least 90% of that in our standard offering. You know, we treat all of our clients the same. You know, we don't have different levels of service. You need the same level of service that a law firm, like I said, you know, needs. So it's a fairly standard business offering that, you know, what you're asking for is nothing new or out of scope other than the size of the amount of data you have. I will perfectly agree, that's a lot of data for this size organization.
That's it for questions here at first. I want to ask our county auditor, Mr. Wasserbach, please state your name on the record, and then please, you have the floor.
Yeah, Bob Wasserbach, county auditor. I'm just speaking for myself, because I'm not sure exactly what each county council member has his or her own legislative aid, and I'm not familiar enough with their work to know exactly what they need access to. But I, as the county auditor, need access to different applications administered by the county, such as there's a tier performance system which has the general ledger on it and some procurement information. There's the Hansen system, which is used for billing and land use matters. And there's a PeopleSoft system that's used for payroll. And I would need to have access to those. Mm-hmm. And I'm not sure how me needing access to those would work in this whole process. Because when you say separate system, I don't know if you're talking about having access to those other applications.
Well, all networks are connected in some way or another out on the internet. There are all these little separate pods, and they all have the interconnect points between them. You heard him reference VPN, virtual private networks. So many times in different branches of government or different office branches, such as that Fox Rothschild's got spread around the country, they have these private connections between the offices to allow them to access data back and forth. And there can be, you know, they can be wide open, which is rare, or they can be restricted down to specific programs, people, desktops that you can access that information. So in any redesign, we'd have to say, yes, what are those services you need to access? How do you currently access them? And then would we access them the same way in the new system? Which it might be that you log in through a secure connection to the rest of the county's connection and do your work just the way you normally do, which really isn't any change in the county's, you know, the county's or other state systems.
Thank you. Do you have any follow-up question?
No.
I'd like to call on Councilwoman Kilpatrick.
Okay, and this kind of leads into what I was going to ask, because if we remember in the last meeting, Councilman Smiley asked about things like code complaints, where we can't, from home through the web, we cannot get onto those, so we would need something here that still would allow our aides to get on. Then again, once we do that, I'm sure we're into some cross charges that go back and forth for that. I just want to tell you a little story that I heard over the weekend. One of the senators and I were talking about this, and I said, do you ever worry that the governor is going to go into your emails? And the response was, 3 years ago, there was an issue with an employee, not with the elected branch, but there was an issue with the employee and somebody going into their email. When that was brought to light, that in the legislator's head said, oh, wait a minute, if somebody can go into their email, what does that mean? Could somebody go into our email? So at a joint finance meeting, they talked to Jim Sills, who was the head of IT for the state, and said, if the governor went to you and said, would you let me into a legislator's email, would you open it up for him? And the answer was yes. And they immediately turned around and put into epilogue language so that it's law that the executive branch could not ever access legislative branch emails. So even when it didn't happen to them, as soon as they thought it could, they resolved it in a heartbeat. That was it. Now, if somebody from the executive branch goes into their emails, it's against the law. And then there's a recourse. If we do any of this internally and somebody still goes into our emails, you can put sanctions on, but what? How do we sanction? How would you sanction somebody from the other side if they don't work for us? Do you see what I'm saying? I mean,
yes.
There's no sanction. So, I mean, I see the glitch here as much as I think that going into a new system is probably better for us on many levels, one of them being technology, because I think we have a very old system that's got a lot of patches in it just to try and work what we want to work. But our glitch is what we still need out of the other side and the cross charges for setting up a system that could do that, and how, you know, we just keep piling one charge after another onto it. So technology, would I like to see a new system? Absolutely, yes. Do I see that there's glitches in doing that? Because we still, for constituent services, need what goes on, what's kept in the servers on the other side. Do I think that there's going to be a problem there? Yes.
So, Councilwoman Kilpatrick, I'm just trying to follow your thoughtful comments. You would be in favor of us having a subset of the county system currently with like council slash NCC.
I don't know that helps.
Or do you prefer a separate system?
The only way that it would help is if first they audited the existing email system and removed all the access that only the owner of the mailbox owner has full access. There's always going to be an administrator access, always. You just can't get rid of it. But you remove any extraneous access that's in there, and you change the administrator password, so it's out. And then from that point on, that access is audited. Nobody should ever have access in. But within any email system, you can grant to Lou personally access to your mailbox. You can just say, you know, Lou, can you look something up? I'm on the road, you know, I want access, and you can actually send an invite that gives him access to your mailbox. You can then personally revoke that access, you know, later on. As long as it starts from you and ends with you, it's not done by the administrator. It's the administrator's access that is sort of invisible.
But I think what we were trying to get away from was an administrator on the executive side, if we felt that the executive side was who were breaching our legislative emails.
Let me restate. I believe what we want to do is have a secure system which doesn't allow anyone on our side or the other side, or anyone even outside both sides, to have access to the integrity of our email systems. Let me recognize Councilman Tackett has joined us. And so the third party administrator would have the key to the kingdom, as opposed to an administrator employed by the legislative or the executive branch.
So then the subset doesn't work.
The subset can work, yes, because it is managed separately. The domain is going out to its own email, the right subdomain can work.
But still, there is an administrator from the executive branch.
No, because in the subdomain, a third party, such as myself or somebody else, is the administrator.
Is the only administrator.
It's the only administrator. As long as we don't give them the passwords into the system, they can't change the rights. We can give them access into the archive system to go look for discovery, for freedom of information, for any of the other approved legal reasons why they should be poking around in mail. But it leaves an audit trail. So we have a full audit trail of who's accessing the information and what they access, because right now you have no audit trail of that's my guess because I haven't looked, that there is no audit trail of what access is going on.
Well, and if there's an audit trail, it's not something that we're privy to.
I just want to repeat what Council to Council just had admonished us earlier, and that is the legislative branch does its own FOIA and controls its own discovery.
Okay.
No.
All right. Is that correct, council to council?
Carol Dooling, council to council. The legislative branch has always done its own Freedom of Information Act responses. That's never been intermingled. Okay. Discovery is assigned to the county attorney is tasked with litigation. Mm-hmm. So that's something that that office would do. But certainly if we had our own system, it would be through me or another employee here.
Yeah, and we would typically get a request signed off by council president says give access to this outside person to, you know, review all mailboxes or specific mailboxes. And then we go in and we make little check boxes that says, yes, you can access this, this, and this. And then there you go.
And just to review our charge based upon the motion, we would have protocols which we would all approve. So, for example, it would say the council president, on advice of the clerk of council and council to council, has the authority to sign off on a FOIA or discovery request. And to be a straw man,
we don't want somebody to come and go, say, I need access over to that mailbox. Can you give it to me? You know, we just don't want that. We want a procedure in place.
Yes. That's why we would have standard protocols that all of council approves at the time that will be become part of our rules that we'll all know. It'll be an open and transparent process so that if you get a call from council person A or B, you'll say that's not the protocol. It can only come from the president of county council after consultation approval by clerk of council and council to council.
Just like we get managing partner of the firm, you know, in a law firm that would send that request and he puts it in writing rather than a little sidebar and say, can you do this? I go, can't do it until you give me a piece of paper that tells
me. And that is a system that could be done for roughly $5,000 a month or $800 a month?
Email only, $800 a month. The entire system, $5,000.
$5,000 a month. I'm going to defer also to our auditors or council to council. Could you just hold a second?
Oh, sure.
And council to council, Dooling.
Thank you. Carol Dooling. I had a question. I wasn't quite clear. You said there could be a subdomain on email. But if someone else, the executive branch, owns the equipment, would they still have access?
They don't. From a technical reason, the subdomain out there on the internet says you go to mail@council.ncc. At that point, it never delivers it to the other's server. It goes out to its own server because it knows this subdomain goes to that server, so it never touches the server that's sitting in the county building or under county management. So it automatically forks it out before even as the user sends it. The internet says, where do I deliver it? Oh, I deliver council dot here, but NCC, you know, DE.org here. So they don't touch, they don't intermingle.
And just a follow-up question, if you're doing a confidential memorandum of a personnel nature or a legal nature on WordPerfect, is that accessible by the owner of the equipment?
If you are set in and you're one of the users that's getting encrypted email that looks for HIPAA, driver's licenses, social security numbers, or keywords that you may put in that say confidential or certain subject line, it encrypts the email that a person then just gets the email on the other end just gets a plain email that says, to read this message, you have to click on this link and go to that site. And that's the encrypted link that they get to go read that confidential information. And if you're within the system, you will see it invisibly between each other, because if you're listed as one of the encrypted mailboxes and you're listed as one of the encrypted mailboxes, he will see it, but he can't save it out, can't leak it out.
A follow-up question by Council Dooling.
I'm sorry, this is not my area of expertise, but what I was actually asking, and if I'm doing an attorney-client privileged email, I mean memorandum on WordPerfect,
mm-hmm.
not through email,
okay.
Can the owner of the system access that WordPerfect document?
The Word Perfect document, that's just stored on the server. It all depends on what your rights are in the server. You can password protect that file, that it provides a level of encryption on that document. And if somebody copies that document off and puts it on a thumb drive, they can't read it if it's encrypted. But if it's password protected, all security is a function of time and money. And the NSA can go read it all because they've got unlimited money and unlimited time. I can go in and break a password in about 15 to 30 minutes by pure computing brute force. So nothing is ever totally secure. Nothing.
That's
the way life is. So your WordPerfect document, you can password protect, you can encrypt, and nobody else can read it with normal, ordinary means.
Council to council, does that prompt another question on how it could be more secure?
Council to council, I would have no clue how to encrypt something.
Okay.
But I guess
it's
what
a plugin in WordPerfect says encrypt this document or password protect. It's already in there.
Owner of the system cannot just sit on their computer, or IT can't sit at their place and look at my Word documents now, or they can?
They probably can now. Okay. They probably can. So unless you're saying password protect this file, and it's right in WordPerfect, and it's right in Microsoft Word, it's a choice up there, protect this document, and it depends on the complexity of the password you give it. If you say ABC1234, that's very simple, and we could break that. But if you wrote, 4 score and 7 years ago, our forefathers upon this continent, you made a longer password, that takes a lot more computing time and power to go break that and get in there.
Thank you. And now, long last, council auditor, yes. Mr. Wasserbach.
Wasserbach, county auditor. It's my understanding, at least for the archived emails, which is a Source One product, that there is an audit trail for who accesses emails. I just wanted to say that.
Okay. Did the tape pick that up? Would you stand close to the tape? Okay.
Okay. I'm sure.
Yeah. It's my understanding, at least for the archived emails, which is a Source One product, it's my understanding that there is an audit trail for who accesses one's archived emails.
Mr. Rutkowski?
Yeah, I have not been exposed to what technology you're using already out there. It's the first time somebody's mentioned that you actually have an archive, because I've asked that question and said, no, we don't have an archive. So.
Janet, can I just ask Mr. Tony Gardner?
We do have an archive system. Okay. We do.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Gardner. And now, Councilwoman Kilpatrick.
Yeah. Since we mentioned audits, are we going to talk about the forensic audit today, or is that not part of your discussion?
No, it is part of our discussions, but we only have X time till 3 o'clock, so it's really a function of our discussion. Certainly willing to take this discussion wherever it goes.
Okay, I guess my question was, if we would do a forensic audit as we voted on in a motion, correct?
Well, we didn't use the word forensic, we just used the word audit, and we didn't say how far back, so
okay,
that may mean different things.
And that was going to be part of my question, is, all right, so I guess then I would want to know the difference between a forensic audit and an audit, and how far back we can go in that. Like, can we do a forensic audit for the last 6 months, the last year, the last 2 years? How?
Typically, an audit is what...
Mr. Rutkowski speaking.
Okay, thank you. Typically, an audit is what is happening now in your system. What software is loaded, what versions, what kind of computer, what resources you have, what connections. Because there can be... And that's usually a snapshot in time. This is the way it is right now. And it picks up whether or not there's software that's a security threat because it's maybe picking up your keystrokes, screen images, whether or not there's other remote control software that's in there. What is in there? That stuff is usually fairly persistent. That means it's always on there. But a good hacker or a well-one in a corporate environment, if they say, we want to audit, but only when you're accessing certain data, that they can pick up your keystrokes when you start using a program. And then when you stop using the program, that software also goes away. And we can't pick that up unless we happen to be auditing in that moment in time when you're using that program. So a base audit, which is what I provided there, is what do you have, what do you own, what's on your computers right now?
That was our discussion.
You know, to go farther back in time is pretty tough to do without taking possession permanently of your hard drive, making a copy, and then having to go look through what occurred on your system over time. That's expensive.
I just want to review, because council members may or may not have had in their own mind when they approved. A separate motion was made by Councilwoman Kilpatrick as follows, quote, I move that we put out an RFP to secure a security audit for council's computer system, end of quote, all in favor of voice vote passed. So based upon where we may want to go beyond that, we may have to go back to council to an executive committee meeting, or if there's the will of this council to do it at a technology committee meeting. I'm not going to direct motions, but we have to take a look at the words that were used. Forensic audit may not have been in the mind to some. It may not have been in the mind to be retroactive. What Mr. Rutkowski has offered is to say that he would do for free an audit in time, and that we could then go forward prospectively with a clean slate auditing as we go.
Yeah, yes, I guess that is correct. That, and from in the IT business, security audit is, where are you right now? Because
right,
we can't always know where you've been. We can tell where you've been in many cases, you know, by what's on your computer. But we are more concerned with what are the current threats to security that are trying to capture personal information, your identity theft, leakage of stuff to the outside world. Those are the top of mind, and those are the ones that we look for first.
Council to council, excuse me, County Council President Bullock.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Right.
What are your preferred next steps in this process?
One is to get an NDA assigned so I can look at your system, so we can make sure that we're diagnosing the right solution for you.
An NDA is?
Non-disclosure agreement, sorry.
Okay.
Using the,
okay.
The legalese out there.
Okay.
That just says, A, I'm given approval to go review your systems, install software to go do the audit, and anything I find is confidential, and I reveal it only back to whoever, you know, approved the audit in the first place. That is usual next step.
So a council, of course, would make the decision, like with a law firm, we have a chief operating partner, it's our council to council president, and you know, I would entertain a motion now, or we can wait till an executive committee to do that. But I think there are some other protocols we need to do as well concerning audit, concerning who would give the authority to the council president. Would it be authority that would be approved by the clerk of council and council of the council? Would it involve the president pro tem as well? These are all possibilities that we should consider. And unless I'm willing to entertain a motion, but I'm also willing to sit down and be a straw man and write out a protocol for later consideration for vetting here at a later technology committee meeting that could then be considered at the executive committee meeting. So I'm just throwing these out for possibilities. And then if Councilwoman Kilpatrick would want to put forward a motion a different kind of audit, then of course that would have to come back to council as well.
From a technology point of view and industry point of view, the audit I offered is what was sort of written or approved in your memorandum or your meeting minutes.
Yes.
So I don't see it as being a difference.
Thank you. Mr. Council President, do you have any follow-up questions?
I think we should do further vetting and those issues you brought up. I'd feel more comfortable with full council here to talk it out.
Thank you. I'd like to hear from
That's my opinion.
Thank you. I'd like to hear from some other council members that have been quiet and listening around the table. If it so pleases them, I'll just go around the room. Councilwoman Diller?
I do think we need to raise this issue of a forensic audit. I think that clearly at this point from what Mr. Rutkowski said, there's a separate, an audit is separate from a forensic audit. I think we're just getting used to the terminology and we need discussion on that. I think that's really part of the purpose of bringing him here is to find out if we could do a forensic audit. So I would be in favor of, you know, moving forward on an audit, but reserving the right to go back at another either technology meeting or executive committee meeting and vote, you know, and craft what is needed for a forensic audit and try and move forward on that.
Yeah, Mr. Rutkowski?
I would just say, as a taxpayer, that you may burn through a lot of money and discover nothing. You may burn through a lot of money and discover a lot of stuff, but it's an expensive proposition to go do unless there is a known smoking gun leak out there right now. As a taxpayer, I will say, you draw the line and go forward.
Do you have to take possession of all the executive committee, executive branch's computers?
Pretty much so, in order to do a full, that's why it's very expensive and many man hours to go do. So I would, it's possible, but I don't think you're gonna come up with any solution. I don't know, but you know, it's a lot of money, a lot of man hours, a lot of labor, and what are we gonna discover? Maybe not anything.
Okay, before we continue, Ms. Diller, would you yield to the auditor?
I'm yielding to the auditor.
Bob Wasserbach, county auditor. I'd be happy as the county auditor to, there's different organizations I belong to for audit professionals. I'd be glad to do some inquiries, get some prices for what I think a forensic audit would cost, which would include going back and looking at who has accessed emails, as well as looking at anybody who's trying to delete any audit trails. Mm-hmm.
Very good. I just want to point out again, and I think Councilwoman Diller made the suggestion that we could take advantage of the offer made by Mr. Rutkowski to do an audit now as described, and that doesn't preclude us from doing a different kind of audit at a later time, but I think that would have to go back to council. That's a pretty draconian measure. I think all 13 members of council should be around the table before we talk about taking possession in some way of the executive branch's computers. So that's just an observation that I'd like to make. Betsy Gardner, as we're going around the table, Clerk of Council, you certainly would be involved in this process. So I'd like to hear what you have to say.
I just have, my concern is for the access to the tier system in PeopleSoft. I mean, as the clerk, I have to know that I can get to those programs and how that interfaces with what changes we would make.
Mr. Rutkowski, could you comment on that? And then also I'll recognize Mr. Shearquist.
Yeah, I would say, again, we see how you're accessing them currently, and I'm sure we can accommodate the existing access, you know, into the system, you know, based on your existing protocols and procedures and maybe some extra layer of protection in there that is now limited to, you know, you, say, on the PeopleSoft versus anybody sitting on the network. So.
And thank you. I'd like to call now on Daniel Shearquist.
What's being discussed right now is not a separate system. It's actually two systems. It's a system for the council. In addition, you want to have access to PeopleSoft tier and various other applications, so you want you want access to the current system. So it's not a cut down the middle. So if there's some sort of concern that the data that you're using is going to be looked at, it's the same data. You're coming from a different location to the same location, and it's the same data. It doesn't matter where you're coming from. So that's just something I'm putting out there. So the cross charges would go up incredibly high because if you're coming from another location, we would have to create specific VPNs for you to come back in that do not exist today in order to access those programs.
Ms. Berg, yes.
Maybe it's just cheaper for us to buy our own software. I mean, maybe we just go with our own PeopleSoft and tier. You know, I mean, maybe that's just the answer, is that it's cheaper for us to buy it.
You know, and
Mr. Rakowski?
You know, a VPN, we bring up VPNs all the time. Even in the cloud, it costs $15 a month at most. And if we own the equipment from end to end, there is no cost to the VPN other than the circuit cost. Obviously, there's the connection on the internet or whatever circuit you've got going back and forth. So.
And now back to Ms. Gardner. Did you have any additional concerns, or were your concerns addressed?
They're just up front.
Okay. Mr. Gardner and then Mr. Cartier.
Okay, I had a question. I know you mentioned the forensic audit. I wanted to know, you had mentioned, is it much more expensive? Do you have a pretty much general idea of the cost?
You'd be on a forensic audit, you'd be about $3,000 a computer, probably, to run
per,
through
to per
run
computer
through a full-blown detail, who done what, where, when, what, why. You know, over a given amount of time, it's an expensive,
but 1,000 machines.
Yeah.
Okay. Okay. Thanks.
Yeah, and you would have to go beyond the scope of what's in the council building here, as you pointed out. You would have to go back to the servers that are in the administrative branch. Yeah. It's,
our deputy CAO, Sam, would you like to comment on something that was just said by Mr. Gardner?
Yes, I just wanted to get clarity. Sam Guy, Deputy CAO. The concept of the forensic audit that's being discussed, I just want clarity. Does that include, like, every computer in the entire county?
No.
Every department, even the computers all through here in county council, every computer would be forensically audited and all emails as well?
Well, that's what I was pointing out. That's a very expensive and possibly fruitless undertaking, because your data, as points out, your data resides in a number of places. And so to access, to know where, you've got to go where that data is.
Staying on just this point, Councilwoman Kilpatrick, would you please address your concerns?
Yes. We know basically the names of the people that have access to our computers. So we wouldn't be looking at every computer in Newcastle County. We would be only looking at those five or six names of the people that we know were listed as having access to county computers.
I think Mr. Rakowski.
From a technology point of view, as I'm sure said, a person's account and their computer are two different things, and that person who has rights can log on essentially to any computer, anywhere, any place. So if you really want to hide your trail, you go walk into your somebody else's secretary or administrative aide's office, sit down at the computer, do the work, do what you do, you get up and you go, and you hide your trail that way. I mean, that's the most simplistic way of hiding the trail. So many times, we need to go look at the least likely person that if Bob's was suspected and somebody had access to Lou's computer, even though we would go look at Lou's computer, even though it wasn't Lou, it was somebody else, because he's the trusted aide to that person. You know, it gets really complicated, and it may be a very fruitless effort to go down that road. And I'm just trying to.
Councilman Hollins, you have a comment on this particular line of discussion.
Yes.
I recognize you.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm just wondering, what is the real benefit to council if we were to do the forensic audit and we realized someone had entered into our system? Then what are the consequences? What do we really do about it? Right now there's suspicion, but even if those suspicions were confirmed, what does it really mean? If we're going to separate the system to prevent it going forward, I don't see any real benefit in spending $1 million trying to find out who went into our computers at what date or what time of day.
Thank you, Mr. Hollins, President Pro Tem Hollins. To anyone on this particular discussion point, now I'm going to call on Councilman Cartier.
So we're looking at two separate issues here, as I see it. We're looking at the nature and depth of an audit that we could undertake, which seems to have complexities of cost and, you know, having real no idea how to really thoroughly do that at this point without getting into, you know, very high cost. The second issue going forward, which I agree with Councilman Hollins, is the most important thing going forward. How are we going to secure our communications within council going forward? I think there's been a lot of, you know, very good information that, you know, our email systems have been breached in the past, and I don't think it's a problem related just to, you know, one administration or another, but in a couple of administrations. And I'm very concerned going forward about the, this is a separate branch of government, and that our communications are secure, and especially documents related to legal advice, legal memorandum, things like that. So if we can get a some sort of a audit that doesn't, you know, become endless and fruitless, we should try to pursue that. I'm no expert in any of this. This is sort of, you know, way over my head in terms of my capabilities. But going forward, it's of vital importance, I think, for council remain as a separate branch of government to have a secure, you know, email communication system that cannot be breached easily or ever again.
Thank you, Councilman Cartier. Councilman Tackett.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Yeah, this is a huge beast. You know, I mean, we've had a lot of discussion on it. I think we're on a rabbit trail here. We're trying to herd cats. you know, seem to not really be getting anywhere. And we're spending, we're consuming a lot of time. All the oxygen in the room seems to be sucked up by one thing. We need, just need to get a hold of this, move forward. I think that probably if we just put some provisions and checks and balances in place moving forward with the system that we have that could give us the assurances perhaps we're looking for, that's probably the venue we need to go then to try to search this whole thing that could result in just the wastefulness, the pure wastefulness of like an exuberant amount of taxpayer dollars that could yield very little fruit. Come on.
Thank you, Councilman Tackett. Councilman Hollins?
My primary concern early on during these discussions has more to do with, I think, other council members have mentioned as well, that is with access, continue to have access and continue to have service. I have an iPad just, you know, connected. I think that's pretty simple, but parcel view and those kind of services, I think Betsy mentioned some of those things, that becomes sort of important to my office.
Thank you. I concur from my perspective as well. Councilman Sheldon?
Yes, the only thing I have, Mr. Chair, is the questions I'd like to see answered is the full price, if we just went with the cloud and you get the license fees for PeopleSoft, because my aide needs to be able to go into this, because we do, we get answers. I call her up, I get an answer pretty quick. Those are the main things I'm looking at, but since we're talking cross charges, if we're going to still be on two separate systems, I don't see why we would have our own after this, because the cross charges from the other side is still the same whether you have two computers or maybe 10 computers. That could be an answer, because you're still doing the work. It's going through a server. So it's either one or none for me, getting to the point, unless we can control this cost. I don't think we as a government can go over to $120,000 or whatever it is. If we're going to go over more and not get a better system, there's no sense in doing it. Because I'll be honest with you, I was really hyped up about this, to go into the cloud and have our own system that we could do and actually get away from the integrated systems, you know, talking to different people out there. I was kind of, you know, getting excited about it, but the more I'm listening here, if we have all these cross charges and the same thing, and we might not be able to get in, you know, get into the system, It's a shame. It actually, today's meeting brought me down some, but it's something I needed to know. But it's
wait till next meeting. We'll bring you back.
Yeah, changing names of apartment complexes.
Yeah. Yeah, next meeting. Yeah, right, exactly. That's all I'm saying. If we can continue the next meeting that we have on the subcommittee, if we could get those prices and just answer my questions on what the cost is if we went to the cloud, our own cloud, and had our own system, what it would cost to get into PeopleSoft and everything that Betsy was talking about that we need to do. I think that's
right. Yeah, I will say that,
you know, Mr. Rakowski.
Sorry, I keep forgetting to introduce myself. But the the modern trend, you know, has been to get the software as a service or hardware as a service. While, you know, 10 years ago, yes, you said, oh, we need this human resources, PeopleSoft. We put a server in our computer room and we load it up and we got three guys working on it, keeping it going. Well, for the most part, now you can go buy that on a per user, per month basis, mm-hmm. and usually take whatever subset of data you have, you know, that is yours, that you have access to, because you don't necessarily need all of the other counties, but you just need, say, your employees. That then gets moved up in the cloud, and then you're back to having a fixed cost, and you break from those cross charges. I have other peers of mine doing similar ventures with other counties in Kansas, in Hays, Kansas. They're doing one across 100. They have one county they have is bigger than Delaware, but they're looking at doing what we're sort of talking about here. They're doing for like all the state of Kansas.
So you can do when you do your audit, you can come back and tell us.
Yeah,
until you do that.
Once I do,
this is
audit.
What our fees. This yes. is what it's yeah. costing council.
Right.
County
there's,
council.
There's first, there's, we know what's on your computers now, and what versions are on there, and how many license counts you have. And then we still have to go around and look at, say, show me how you do your work. What do you do during your day in access that, because they go, oh, I access this through a cloud function or on his iPad.
Right.
Oh, well, see, that doesn't show in the audit because, you know, we're not on that machine. So you need to discover some of these things through an interview process. So show me how you do your work. Show me what software you're using. Okay, I recorded it down. Now I know how many licenses we need, how many people are doing. But the trend is away from the internal IT department to putting the resources in the cloud. You can go up and down. You get rid of employees, your costs go down. You add employees, your costs go up. But it's a finite fixed number rather than, you know, a whole huge IT department that you've got to support.
Right. So if we get it, if we were able to pass to say that they could, because the audit was free, was that the way?
Yes, that is correct.
It's kind of like a no-brainer. I don't know if we're allowed to do that tonight or not. I mean,
right,
I don't want to go overboard here.
I'll charge you $600.
Well, then we need about eight more. We need all council. I'm trying to move this on because I know we need 9 months. I know this is going to happen. We need this done by May 30th.
Mr. Sheldon, I would entertain a motion if we're now joined by powers to authorize Mr. Rakowski to do the two things he said he would do for free, an audit, and to review our system by giving him the rights to take a look at our system. What's that called again?
The non-disclosure agreement.
Okay, so
a motion. So moved.
Second. Now, so the motion has been to authorize, what's the name of your company, sir?
Boulder Designs.
To perform an audit.
Network audit,
and
it's all inclusive in the network audit. So.
A network audit.
Yeah, it's just
At no charge.
At no charge.
Thank you, taxpayers.
As a fellow taxpayer.
Excellent.
There's a motion on the floor. It's been seconded. Comment.
Okay, I got it.
General Manager Gardner.
I got a question. In regards to the computers that you would take a look at, will it be just the council computers, or are you looking at everything?
Scope would only be the council's computers, the 34 that I was told that you have in this building, in this space. So we don't span across.
Okay.
Daniel Sherpas, yeah. I'm just curious to know if that's specific to computers, desktops, iPads, is it everything, or is it just
It's whatever we can see on the network.
Got it.
Okay.
If you've got Wi-Fi, we'll see the iPads out there as well.
Discussion on the motion. Auditor Wasserbach, please come close to the mics.
By the way, if you would like to see, in the back, I gave copies of two of my books I've published. In the back of one of there, we have a standing offer for any company to do an audit. In the back of, I think the blue book has that. So if you wanted to see what it is, it's a standard offering our business does, and my peers do. So it's nothing extraordinary.
Okay, Auditor Wasserbach.
Okay. Yeah, Bob Wasserbach, County Auditor. I guess I just wanted to make sure for this audit / diagnosis, whatever it's called. I'm in a different building, although I report to County Council, so hopefully it's going to include me, too.
We can include any divergent computers out there as well by giving you a little email and go click to go run a particular program. And that will gather the information.
Okay, thank you.
Okay, it's been moved.
And we will remove that said software when the audit is done.
It's been moved and seconded, motion by Councilman Sheldon, seconded by Councilwoman Diller, that the company so named would do an internal audit as described by the vendor. I'm going to do a poll. Either you're, yay, nay, or opposed or not voting. Going around the further comment, Councilman.
Just a question. How long would this audit take?
I was mine. I was going to ask that.
We start getting results immediately, but I need at least 48 to 72 hours crawl through your network.
Slightly speed.
Okay. So, good question.
I know, it is a good question.
That's hours and not days.
Yeah, it's a first thing.
4 hours. It's the software we use is not intrusive. It tries to be not intrusive in your operation. It is discoverable. It's Kaseya. We'll use the Kaseya agent to go do that. It's a well-known industry standard piece of software to go do such.
Thank you.
We still have to beat 9 months.
No. And then we can give you the report in the following week.
Mr. Shearquist.
Just putting it out there that we do have to work in tandem. Their machines, their accounts will not allow EXEs to be executed.
That's good.
Thank you.
We are the concierge. We coordinate. Our job is to coordinate all the technical services together. So.
Thank you. So moved and seconded. Councilwoman Diller.
Yes.
Councilman Cartier?
Yes.
Councilman Tackett?
Yeah.
Councilman Hollins?
Yes.
Councilman Sheldon?
Yes.
Councilwoman Kilpatrick?
Yes.
Councilman Powers?
Yes.
Council Weiner? Yes. So moved?
Yes.
And Councilman, Council President Bullock had expressed his interest in supporting this motion before he had to leave for a meeting. We're going to continue this meeting. I want to thank Councilwoman Kilpatrick for allowing us to substitute in place of, we're not going to continue this meeting, but the next technology subcommittee meeting will be when economic development was scheduled. That'll be about a half hour earlier, so it'll be Tuesday, April 21st at 1:30 p.m. It'll be the next executive committee meeting. Any other comments from council members? Mr. Cartier.
I just would like to reflect on the fact that my former aide, Brian Herleiter, who has performed valuable service to this council, I believe, because he broached the whole idea of the advantages of the council and perhaps even this government eventually making the leap and going into cloud computer serving, which is, in fact, the trend that is going on out there. And it's something that I would encourage the executive side to look at as well, because I think we can realize, you know, cost savings, and we can get instant upgrades in efficiency through these cloud servers who automatically update software, automatically, take care of technical issues. I think it offers, you know, it's the 21st century way of doing computing, and we need to take it seriously, just as a government in general, look at the advantages of going to cloud computer services. You have three major providers out there right now, Amazon, yes. Google, and Microsoft,
yes.
that offer FOIA-able government-type cloud-based systems. that can really meet our needs and do a really great job for us.
Thank you, Councilman Cartier. Councilman Hollins, did you have something you wanted to say?
No.
Okay. I just want to thank the administration for its publicly stated support for council going for its own separate system. Just like to note that many on council, including Councilman Hollins and myself, going back 12 years, have urged council to go with a separate system. And on the technology system, we looked at doing the cloud at a modicum of cost. And so this is something that many of us have pursued. I'm pleased that there seems to be a general support for that. So with that, I'll entertain a... excuse me. Public comments from those here in the public. Make it quick, please. Mr. Aide, we're running out of time.
John, is there any way for us to encrypt our emails right now with this current system we have? If we want to send out encrypted emails, can we do that? Is that quick enough?
Most likely, yes, but I do not know what email system you're using because I have not delved into what you have, but there are various add-ons to already encrypt any content you want to send to anybody.
Daniel, is that something we could do?
That is something that we've looked into many times. The problem with that is there's what's called a private key and a public key. The two recipients, the recipient and the receiver, must share the key prior to the emails being exchanged. So if you're sending an encrypted email to someone who does not have that private key, they will not be able to decrypt it. So it can be done. It's extremely complicated. But it can be done.
Thank you.
Thank you. Any questions or comments or statements from the public at large? Seeing none, I'll entertain a motion to adjourn.
So moved.
Second, adjourned by Councilman Cartier. Second?
Second.
Second, Councilman Sheldon. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Meeting adjourned at 5 minutes to three.
I have a question. Thank you. Coming in. Just to want my senior staff.
Sorry, I was so abrupt.